Welcome to another edition of American Exposé. This is Chris Gerner speaking to you, and what is today's date? The 2nd of February, 2005. When I do these anymore, I get madder and madder. I get more upset, and I didn't think I was going to, as Sparky takes off, my dog, one of my guys, he knows how I am. The State of the Union Address. What insanity. The man's talking about Agenda 21. George Bush is talking about Agenda 21. And No Child Left Behind, and I didn't hear all of it, but No Child Left Behind hit me. Jobs hit me. Social Security hit me. And the point of this whole thing is that Bill Clinton, apparently, is going to be the next Secretary General of the UN system, and I don't see how that can be overturned. George Bush is harping on the Agenda 21. He never mentions Agenda 21. He never mentions that the coalition is any part of the UN system, because the American people don't want the UN system. Our representatives on C-SPAN are oblivious to what's going on. They play this dog and pony show to us. We are so dumbed down. We are so pushed into a position of ignoration. It is so insane at this point in time. Now, let me make my point, people. Dated October 20th, 2003. From New York, Ambassador Sishin Siv. That's Ambassador Sishin Siv, S-I-C-H-A-N-S-I-V, two words. Sishin, S-I-C-H-A-N, is the first word. Second word, S-I-V. He is the U.S. representative to the United Nations Economic and Social Council. And coming from the State Department, listeners, on October 20th, 2003, implementation of Agenda 21 and the outcomes of the World Summit on Sustainable Development. Delisa Rice isn't going to talk about Agenda 21 to you. Larry King Live at 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time is going to have live reaction of the president's address from Senators John McCain and Dianne Feinstein. They're not going to talk about this. The insanity is well in place. So this says at the World Summit on Sustainable Development, WSSD, the international community called on the UN Commission on Sustainable Development, the CSD, to reshape itself by placing more emphasis on actions that enable implementation at all levels. Implementation at all levels, listeners. This past May, the Commission responded by adopting a series of path-breaking reforms. They are a necessary step towards making the United Nations more responsive and relevant to the needs of all, especially developing countries. At the CSD 11th session, members agreed to limit the number of negotiations and to focus on how the international community, governments, international organizations, civil society, and the private sector can work together to achieve our ambitious and critical objectives. We also agreed to CSD 11 to focus each two-year cycle on a set of priorities. The thematic cluster for 2004-2005, water, sanitation, and human settlements will give us a key opportunity to build on not only the WSSD, once again the World Summit on Sustainable Development, but also the World Water Forum in Kyoto this past March. Finally, we agreed to several innovations to facilitate action and capacity building. This includes a learning center where experts from around the world will give and receive training during the CSD meeting, once again the Commission on Sustainable Development. We also agreed to build on CSD 11th Successful Partnerships Fair concept. That's CSD's 11th Successful Partnerships Fair concept, and provide a forum for representatives of sustainable development partnerships to exchange experiences, enhance their ongoing partnerships, and forge new ones. These reforms represent a new and promising way of doing business at the United Nations. Next April CSD 12 review session will be a critical test of whether the UN can convene international experts to truly focus on how we solve some of today's most critical problems, not through norm setting, but rather through real actions on the ground. We cannot afford to waste this opportunity. The design of the meeting should make it clear that the CSD 12, that's 12 years, people, 12 years of implementation of the Commission on Sustainable Development since the Rio Summit of Rio de Janeiro, is a session not just for diplomats. Once again, we cannot afford to waste this opportunity. The design of the meeting should make it clear that this CSD 12 is a session not just for diplomats, but for technical experts from a wide range of government agencies. And that it is not just a session for government representatives, but for implementation actors from all sectors of society. There you have it, people. From the State Department, October 20th, 2003, implementation of Agenda 21 and the outcomes of the World Summit on Sustainable Development. From the State Department, October 20th, 2003. That's exactly what's going on right this very minute with the President's address, the State of the Union address. Incredible stuff, listeners, that you heard tonight. According to CNN, President Bush discussed his plans to advance liberty in the world and protect opportunities for future generations of Americans Wednesday in his State of the Union address. Bush was greeted with thunderous applause as he entered the chamber of House of Representatives. And what difference does it make whether it's Bush or Clinton or Bush Poppy Bush, the originator of the poppy from the past? Oh, Jeez, listeners, I just get so mad now. I have so much trouble holding my temper anymore. And that's why I'm forming a network. I want informers on this network. I want people to inform others. People are starving for information. It's been that case for years. It's been the way it has ever since I've been on the air. People are starving for information and documentation. That's why I'm forming a new network. Apparently, it's all in place to be operated. We just need to get the management functioning properly and the personnel to operate it. I'm tired of penny waste broadcasts that deal with no significance at all about what's going on in our country today. I am so upset at the lack of knowledge of Americans, the dumbing down process, lifelong learning, what a joke. It's for the UN system and everything that comes from there. Billy Bob Clinton's going to be the next Secretary General of the United Nations. You better believe it. You wait. It'll be a big fight, but he'll get it. Because he's an offspring of the Rockefeller family, apparently. He has clout. He has significance. And I think he is going to be there as the Secretary General of the UN system. The UN system is the world governmental system that's operating in the world today right now. President Bush is subservient to the UN system and the IMF and the Federal Reserve. President Bush does what he is told. The Secretary of the Treasury is the U.S. Governor of the International Monetary Fund. Every country has a governor of the IMF that's a member of the United Nations. You have to become a member of the IMF to become a member of the United Nations. And our Secretary of the Treasury receives no compensation from the United States, and that's a foreign corporation. The alternate U.S. representative to the IMF is Alan Greenspan from the Federal Reserve. It makes sense. That information is documented on our website, thanks to Darren, my partner at this point in time. Only because he sees how big it's become. He sees what it is. He sees how it's all been secluded in secrecy. Something called Agenda 21. Here we see from the newspaper, and a lot of newspaper articles that I haven't been paying attention to, but I did last night pull out some of them. From Davos, Switzerland, this is actually dated Saturday, January 29th. The threat of military action to stop Iran's nuclear ambitions became a center theme Friday at the World Economic Forum, with Germany's leader warning that the Middle East cannot abide another war, a clear message to the United States that is being increasingly echoed throughout Europe. And it goes on to say, quote, this is a hotbed region already, end quote. German Chancellor Gerhard Schroeder, one of the leading opponents of the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq, said in a round of applause, quote, the last thing we need is another military conflict, end quote. Germany has been working with Britain and France to persuade Iran to forgo nuclear activities that could be used to make atomic weapons. Iran maintains its only enriching uranium enough to create nuclear power, not weapons. What difference does it make? Here we see from the 108th Congress, Senate Resolution Number 82, dated March 12, 2003, expressing the sense of the Senate concerning the continuous repression of freedoms within Iran and of individual human rights abuses, particularly with regard to women. There's no mention of nuclear weapons in here. Whereas the people of the United States respect the Iranian people and value the contributions that Iran's culture has made to world civilization over three millennia, whereas the Iranian people aspire to democracy, civil, political, and religious rights, and the rule of law, as evidenced by increasingly frequent anti-government and anti-Khomeini demonstrations within Iran and by statements of numerous Iranian expatriates and dissidents. Whereas Iran is an ideological dictatorship presided over by an unelected supreme leader with limitless veto power, an unelected expeditionary council and council for guardians capable of exasperating any reforms, and a president elected only after the aforementioned disqualified 234 other candidates for being too liberal, reformist, or secular. Whereas the Iranian government has been developing a uranium enrichment program, there it is, that by 2005 is expected to be capable of producing several nuclear weapons each year, which would further threaten nations in the region and around the world. And, once again, MSNBC chronicled and documented the fact that Israel is loaded with nuclear weapons and the plans to build them. Why? Whereas the United States recognizes the Iranian people's concerns that President Mohammad Khatami's rhetoric has not been matched by his actions. Whereas President Khatami clearly lacks the ability and inclination to change the behavior of the state of Iran, either toward the vast majority of Iranians who seek freedom or toward the international community. Whereas political repression, newspaper censorship, corruption, vigilante intimidation, arbitrary imprisonment of students, and public executions have increased since President Khatami's inauguration in 1997. Whereas men and women are not equal under the laws of Iran, and women are legally deprived of their basic rights, etc., etc. Well, let's hear this one. Whereas the Iranian government shipped 50 tons of sophisticated weaponry to the Palestinian Authority despite Chairman Arafat's ceasefire agreement, consistently seeks to undermine the Middle East peace process, provides safe haven to Al-Qaeda and Taliban terrorists, allows transit of arms for guerrillas seeking to undermine our ally, Turkey, provides transit of terrorists seeking to destabilize the United States protected safe haven in Iraq, and develops weapons of mass destruction. Da, 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 da. Oh, there's just a little bit more. Let's just go with it. Whereas, since the terrorist attacks of September 11, 2001, and despite rhetorical protestations to the contrary, the government of Iran has actively and repeatedly sought to undermine the United States' war on terror. Whereas there is a broad-based movement for change in Iran that represents all sectors of Iranian society, including youth, women, student bodies, military personnel, and even religious figures, that is pro-democratic, believes in secular government, and is yearning to live in freedom. Whereas, following the tragedies of September 11, 2001, tens of thousands of Iranians filled the streets spontaneously and in solidarity with the United States and the victims of the terrorist attacks, and whereas the people of Iran deserve the support of the American people, now therefore be it resolved that it is the sense of the Senate that, one, legitimizing the regime of Iran stifles the growth of genuine democratic forces in Iran and does not serve the national security interests of the United States. What are they talking about, the national security interests of the United States? The UN system. This is it. The UN system. You've got to get this through your heads, those that don't have it in their heads already, from their own research. Number two, positive gestures of United States toward Iran should be directed toward the people of Iran and not political figures whose survival depends upon preservation of the current regime. And three, it should be the policy of the United States to seek a genuine democratic government in Iran that will restore freedom to the Iranian people, abandon terrorism, and live in peace and security with the international community. Hogwash. Senate Resolution Number 82, I wonder how it's been reintroduced in the 109th Congress. Senate Resolution Number 82, 108th Congress, March 12, 2003, by Mr. Braunbach. Oh, God, I just get so mad. So back to President Bush's State of the Union address. Bush praised Congress for working with him to cut taxes and crack down on corporate criminals. What's a corporate criminal? Someone that doesn't do their smog control devices on their factories? What is a corporate criminal? when the federal government is a corporation in itself. He said his economic policies helped overcome a recession and create 2.3 million new jobs. I don't believe that. He said his economic policies helped overcome a recession and create 2.3 million new jobs. Prove it. Prove it. How can that be? Do we have 2.3 million new jobs in this country since he has taken office? How can he lie like that to the American people? Are they service economy jobs? From the Economic Policy Institute, I just don't know who they are, but they see, they, and then this is that report, U.S.-China trade 1989 to 2003, impact on jobs and industries nationally and state by state. It says here, China's entry into the World Trade Organization was supposed to provide openings for sufficiently rapid growth in U.S. exports to reduce the trade deficit with China. While the export growth rate has increased since 2001 from a very small base, the value of those exports has been swamped by a rapidly rising tide of imports. The WTO is a free trade and investment agreement that has provided investors with a unique set of guarantees designed to stimulate foreign direct investment and the movement of factories around the world, especially from the United States to low-wage locations such as China and Mexico. Furthermore, did you hear that? Once again, let's just repeat it. The WTO is a free trade and investment agreement that has provided investors with a unique set of guarantees designed to stimulate foreign direct investment and the movement of factories around the world, especially from the United States, to low-wage locations such as China and Mexico. Furthermore, no protections were contained in the core of the agreement to maintain labor or environmental standards. China's refusal to re-evolve its exchange rate, despite enormous demand for its currency, is also a major contributor to the growth of the U.S. trade deficit. Thus, the WTO and the broader process of globalization have tilted the economic playing field in favor of investors and against workers and the environment, resulting in a race to the bottom in wages and environmental quality. An analysis of the effect of trade on domestic economy begins by considering the impact of both imports and exports. If the United States exports 1,000 computers to China, many American workers are employed in their production. If, however, the United States imports 1,000 computers from China rather than building them domestically, then a similar number of Americans who otherwise would have been employed by the office machine industry and its suppliers will have to find other work. Hence, increases in exports support domestic employment, while increases in imports displace domestic production that could have supported more jobs in any given sector. Some analysts examine only the benefits of growing exports to the economy while ignoring the role of imports. This is especially true at the state and metropolitan level because the U.S. Census Bureau generates a series of reports on exports from these regions. No comparable statistics on domestic production displaced by imports are available from the U.S. government. The report is designed in part to begin filling that gap with estimates of the employment effects of imports and exports from China at the state level. A little more of this, because the insanity of this State of the Union address is no different than any other insane State of the Union address by any other president who's a dictator in this country. The study begins with an overview of trends in U.S.-China trade and employment supporting production flows, with an emphasis on developments since China's 2001 entry into the United Nations World Trade Organization. The next section examines trends in trade flows and employment opportunities in major industries, followed by a brief examination of results for a full set of about 190 countries. Next, follows an analysis of the effects of changes in trade flows at the state level. The paper concludes with the discussion of the methodology used, a review of employment multiplier concepts and results, and a discussion of topics for future research. The overview goes as this, listeners. Total trade flows between the United States and China are shown in the top half of Table 1, which you cannot see. U.S. exports increased from $5.8 billion in 1989 to $26.1 billion in 2003, a fourfold increase. Imports rose from $11.9 billion to $151.7 billion in the same period, a 12-fold increase on top of a base that was already twice as large as exports. As a result, the U.S.-China trade deficit increased $119.5 billion, or nearly 2,000%. You think President Bush is ever going to talk about that? Our trade deficit to communist China? No. He's going to crack down on corporate criminals. What is a corporate criminal? What have they done? So he says, once again, his economic policies helped overcome a recession and create 2.3 million new jobs. That, apparently, is a bold-faced lie. Bush called for a bipartisan effort to restrain, quote, the spending effort of the federal government, end quote. Oh, laugh it off, because you're just going to get so upset, Chris. And you got to watch out for your health now. Quote, the budget substantially reduces or eliminates more than 150 government programs that are not getting results or duplicate current efforts or do not fulfill essential priorities. The principle here is clear. A taxpayer dollar must be spent wisely or not at all, he said. Well, how about let's just stop this Middle East mess? Let's get to the bottom of the fact that we went after Saddam Hussein and his weapons of mass destruction when weapons of mass destruction are in Israel. And apparently an Israel-backed firm has bought the UN Plaza. That's way back in 1992, January 9th. Coming from the New York Post, a New York-based company backed by Israeli shekels is ready to make its first Class A solo splash. Capital Real Estate is now in contract to buy the glamorous green glass 1, 2, and 3 UN Plaza from the United Nations Development Corporation for approximately $161 million. The title transfer is awaiting sign-offs from the new mayoral administration, and the UN could take place this quarter. Capital has been a quiet city investor for the last 8 years with Stellar's Larry Gluck. Oh, well, I don't have to give you all these different directions. The point is, who runs Israel? Barry Chamish says it's the Council on Foreign Relations. Barry Chamish, you've heard of him, said it's the CFR. But on one of my broadcasts that I interviewed him, he said he was a Zionist. Oh, yes. So, how do you know what's going on there? You just know it was put together by the UN system anyway, Israel. I think it was Resolution 181. Back with more, momentarily.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com worldwide. Freedom is never free. We need your support today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Could the honeybee be an accident? The answer is next on today's Creation Moment. And now, here's our Creation Moment's host, Ian Taylor.
One of the reasons many scientists don't accept evolution is that it is impossible to explain even the simplest of the incredible designs we find in creation as the work of a mindless, impersonal force. Imagine the challenge of explaining the many specialized features of the honeybee as the work of no one. The honeybee has compound eyes which enable him to navigate by the sun, even on cloudy days, because it has a built-in polarized light filter. The antenna of the honeybee contain both his sense of smell and his sense of touch. For this reason, they must be carefully cleaned. So the honeybee has special grooves in his front legs, which are perfectly designed to clean them. The honeybee also has hairs on his body to collect pollen and baskets on his rear legs to carry it. He also has special glands for producing, shaping, and cleaning off wax. When he returns home with news of a good pollen source, the honeybee has a language which he can use to tell others about it. Not only is the honeybee a huge collection of special features united together, but he also lives in a hive which unites thousands of individuals so that they all work together like a single organism. It simply goes against everything we know from science to suppose that millions of years of unplanned accidents could design and build the honeybee.
To get a complete set of transcripts from Creation Moments programs, ask about the book Letting God Create Your Day when you visit us online at creationmoments.com. And join us again for another Creation Moment, proclaiming evidence of God's truth.
Record budget deficits, bankruptcies galore, and the U.S. dollar is at an all-time low. With today's gloomy economic outlook, safe investments are often hard to find. For over a decade, Melody Cederstrom at Discount Gold and Silver Trading Company has been helping people secure their future by investing in the precious metals. Melody has the honesty, integrity, and experience that is often lacking in the precious metals business. Let her put it to work for you. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188.
And welcome back to the broadcast called American Exposé. American spelled with a K, not a C. Website increasing in size. Lots of information there. Sam and Trish's presentation at that meeting regarding the water well metering is on the website. I'm hoping that the management at this network will play it Friday night in this time slot. I'm hoping that that will happen. I'll try and talk to him about that. And you know, the way things are going on, the way things are being implemented, there might be people out there thinking, yeah, well, it's just all meant to happen. There's nothing we can do about it. Well, I don't want to be that way. I want to sound the alarm. I want people to get on the same page and understand what's being implemented at them and on them. Because let me tell you, the metering of the wells will just quiet down real surely, and they'll stop metering wells once the groundswell of opposition is curtailed. And they won't meter wells until we're disarmed and we can't do anything about it. And they, the authorities, will be the only ones that are armed. And you won't be able to protect yourself or your family or your livestock or your animals. You won't be able to protect yourself once we're disarmed. The State Department has had a disarmament agenda since 1961. It's been reiterated by public laws and increased. The police are thugs now, are trained to be thugs. They aren't here to protect us. They're here to pounce. Property has become the enemy. Your property is taken away from you for certain reasonings. Asset forfeiture is what it's called. This is what supposedly keeps the government alive. Baloney. The drug trade keeps the government alive, and the military-industrial complex keeps the government going. But that can all change. That can all stop if enough people got awake. The only trouble is if they became awake, a major event, a major terrorist event would happen to take all the press away from that. Just like the move for Kofi Annan to step down because of the oil for food scandal, which is not the reason to make him step down. I mean, shoot, the whole reasoning to get the UN out of this system is very, very complicated. You can't just get the U.S. out of the U.S. or get the U.N. out of the U.S. or get us out of the U.N. and get the U.N. out of the U.S. You can't just do that because of the IMF control and the Federal Reserve control. The Federal Reserve dictates what we're going to get. The Federal Reserve will never let the U.N. out of this country unless enough people get awake, unless enough people make a difference and expose what's being generated on us and at us today. Paramount environmental modification, creation of earthquakes, creation of tsunami bombs, manipulation of the weather, weather modification, ability to direct storms, ability to create droughts, ability to wreak havoc on the world by quote-unquote natural means is number one priority right now to pay attention to in 2005. It's way late. The time to be talking about secret societies was 10 years ago. The time to be talking about the implementation of who's behind it 10 years ago. We are so into Agenda 21 today, you cannot begin to get to all the websites that are being enacted under Agenda 21. They're all up to date, most of them. Most of them are way up to date. And people just aren't paying attention to this. I'm so sorry that that's the case. I don't think there was one mention by this President Bush about the Kyoto Protocol or the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. And we're 14 days to entry into force. So the Kyoto Protocol, what does it mean? When they adopted the convention, governments knew that its commitments would not be sufficient to seriously tackle climate change. At the COP1, Berlin, March, April 1995, in a decision known as the Berlin Mandate, the parties therefore launched a new round of talks to decide on stronger and more detailed commitments for industrialized countries. In other words, countries that manufacture things, products. The only trouble is the ultimate goal here is to destroy industrialization. The ultimate goal is to bring the world, not just this country, but bring the world back to pre-Columbus times. That's why rewilding America is also being rewilded all throughout the world. That's why the State Department implements directions to do this worldwide, because we are the UN system. We've been the UN system all our lives. The reason we went to Korea was because of the UN system. The reason we went to Vietnam was because of the UN system. We were meant to lose the war in Vietnam to spread communism because UN is communist as a majority. There is a major war going on in this world, and it's a silent, quiet war because nobody realizes it. Except those that are being attacked in other countries, like Iraq, and our soldiers are over there wondering, well, is this the enemy, or is that the enemy? Who's the bad guy here? As he looks in a crowd of people, he looks, and he looks this, he looks to the left, he looks to the right, he looks up in the balconies, he looks in the doorways. Who's the bad guy? Who's the good guy? How insane can this be? In our country today, to accept another Vietnam and another Korea. How can we be so stupid? So regarding this Kyoto Protocol, after 2.5 years of intense negotiations, the Kyoto Protocol was adopted at COP3 in Kyoto, Japan, Banzai, on 11 December 1997. The complexity of the negotiations, however, meant that considerable unfinished business, quote-unquote unfinished business, remained even after the Kyoto Protocol itself was adopted. The protocol sketched out the basic features of its mechanisms, quote-unquote mechanisms, and compliance system. For example, it did not flesh out the all-important rules of how they would operate. Although 84 countries signed the protocol, indicating they intended to ratify, many were reluctant to actually do so and bring the protocol into force before having a clear picture of the treaty's rulebook. Have we seen the treaty's rulebook? Has any of us seen the treaty's rulebook? Has anyone in this country seen the treaty's rulebook? Has any representative in this country seen the treaty's rulebook? They're going to implement it through the State Department and federal agencies. It's going to be mandated and implemented whether we like it or not. That's what the State Department does. They just disguise it under a different name or a different organization. Fourteen days until this is rule of the law of the land, and we're going to be part of it whether we like it or not, as I've covered information about this already. So, back to the State of the Union address. I'm going to bypass Social Security because I think Social Security was set up in a socialist system under the guise of democracy. However, in today's day and time, I think Social Security is good. And I think they're going to tear it down because they've got to tear down the structure of this country slowly but surely. Just like they're dumbing down the children in the schools, forcing parents to homeschool. The bottom line is, listeners, we're in a United Nations system. The State of the Union address was addressing Agenda 21. Nobody's heard of Agenda 21 on purpose. Because if the American people knew what was coming under the guise of Agenda 21, they wouldn't accept it. According to excerpts of the address released earlier, the president will also address the war in Iraq, saying that, quote, our generational commitment to the advance of freedom, especially in the Middle East, is now being tested and honored in Iraq. We will succeed because the Iraqi people value their own liberty, as they showed the world last Sunday. Oh, really? We are standing for freedom of our Iraqi friends, and freedom of Iraq will make America safer for generations to come, end quote. How can that be? Going to October 20th, 2001, from the Associated Press out of Moscow, listen carefully to this. The U.S.-led international effort against terrorism must become a coalition for a new world and fair order if it is to succeed, former President of the Soviet Union Mikhail Gorbachev said in an interview published Saturday. Once again, dated October 20, 2001, quote, if the fight against terrorism is reduced to force actions, the world will eventually lose, end quote. Gorbachev told Rossiya Gazeta, quote, if it becomes part of joint efforts to build a just world order, everybody shall win, including those who today are not supporting the U.S. actions and the coalition, end quote. Mikhail Gorbachev, the butcher of Afghanistan to a certain degree. The sanctioning of the butcher of the Afghan people from 1979 to 1989. One of the members of the coalition is Russia. They're aiding the Afghans today. You can see that on the website, AmericanExpose.com. The coalition is the UN system. They just don't tell us this. They don't want us to believe that the UN system is alive and well and in action in the Middle East right now. Gorbachev urged politicians to remember the notions of solidarity and said developing nations must be helped to overcome poverty. Where have we heard this before, listeners? Right straight out of the UN system. The UN Security Council, he added, should take the initiative in developing corresponding programs. Nuclear and chemical disarmament and control over the remaining stockpiles must become a top priority, he said. That's because the Soviet Union helped engineer the United Nations system during the Second World War. The Soviet Union had, and it was Molotov, had a secret deal with Alger Hiss that the Security Council would always be headed by a Soviet or a Soviet satellite. I don't know whether that's the case today or not. But the UN system was set up and allowed and requested as a spying apparatus for the Soviet Union. The fall of the Soviet Union was for our consumption, to let us believe that communism is dead. Communism is alive and well. Look at the communitarian network in America today. Look at the Communist Party USA today. I might have information tonight about what the Communist Party USA is saying. But back to Mikhail Gorbachev. Gorbachev also noted that despite Russia's strong support for the U.S.-led military operation in Afghanistan, many of his country are concerned about the bombings and question whether America should also back Russia in such an hour of need. Such thorny issues as the expansion of NATO and the future of U.S.-Soviet anti-missile agreement, quote, would be easier to resolve when we have a joint strategy of moving to a new world community, end quote, Gorbachev wrote. Gorbachev is just as significant today as Henry Kissinger is just as significant today. Henry Kissinger was Secretary of State during the closing years of the Vietnam War. It was demanded that Secretary of State Henry Kissinger become the Secretary of State when Nixon was elected president in 68. Apparently, Nixon did not want Henry Kissinger as Secretary of State, but David Rockefeller demanded Henry Kissinger be Secretary of State. Henry Kissinger was in charge of the Paris peace talks for the Vietnam War that went on for years. Henry Kissinger and Richard Nixon together sold out 85% of 5,000 prisoners of war from Vietnam because, according to Vietnam and the book Kiss the Boys Goodbye by Monica Jensen Stevenson, the prisoners of war by North Vietnam were called pearls, something of value, pearls. They wanted reparations in exchange for the POWs. And Kissinger and Nixon offered them $3.25 billion in reparations for our prisoners of war. But apparently, Congress would not do that and give them reparations because evidently they did not know of the agreement of the return of the POWs from Vietnam. Now, it's been told to me that Colonel Tom McKinney, who is very prominent in the book Spite House about Bobby Garwood, the only POW to make it out of Vietnam in 1979, after 4 years in captivity, to say there were more, and then he was court-martialed 4 years later, after he was told to keep his mouth shut, to keep from jeopardizing the other POWs that were remaining in Vietnam? Well, according to Colonel Tom McKinney, there could be and could have been, even some years ago, a secret returnee program with new identities of our prisoners of war that remained in Vietnam. I don't know. How do you get to the bottom of that one? How do you get to the bottom of weather modification? How do you get to the bottom of a tsunami bomb creating what happened out there in Asia? Unless good people in positions of prominence start disclosing the truth and the facts. We have no hope. Unless good people in the media come on board to tell the truth and the facts and let it be known what the true situation is with the information that's given to us, we have no chance at all whatsoever. As I continue with this information, Mikhail Gorbachev wants anti-terrorism effort to lead to a just world order by the Associated Press, October 20th, 2001. As Soviet leader, Gorbachev presided over the 1989 Soviet withdrawal from Afghanistan, which ended a humiliating 10-year involvement during which his country lost more than 15,000 soldiers. He remains respected in the West for initiating reforms in the former Soviet Union, but is widely despised at home, where he is blamed for the Soviet collapse and the often chaotic years of transition. Once again, this comes from the Associated Press, controlled information, controlled media. They call it their Vietnam. Only they lost 15,000 troops, we lost 58,000 troops. I saved certain articles, and this one I saved since 2001. Mikhail Gorbachev wants anti-terrorism effort to lead to just world order. And what does Bush say? Quote, the new political situation in Iraq opens a new phase of our work in that country. We will increasingly focus our efforts on helping prepare more capable Iraqi security forces, forces with skilled officers, and an effective command structure, end quote. What's he talking about? Inclusion into the UN system the way they're supposed to be into the UN system. The IMF having control of the Middle East wealth. With Iraq having a governor of the IMF because they're a member of the UN system. That's what Bush is talking about. Echoing a theme he sounded in his second inaugural address, Bush also linked America's future security to the advance of freedom, particularly in the Middle East, according to the excerpts. That's UN. Loss of sovereignty in the Middle East, the last bastion of sovereignty in the world, is the Middle East countries. And that's what he's talking about, implementing the UN system in the Middle East. Quote, in the long term, the peace we seek will only be achieved by eliminating the conditions that freed radicalism and ideologies of murder, end quote. Quote, the only force powerful enough to stop the rise of tyranny and terror and replace hatred with hope is the force of human freedom, end quote. Actually, what he's talking about is democracy in the UN system and NATO. NATO says in their own charter from 1949, we uphold the principles of the United Nations. That's what NATO says. On Sunday, Iraqis voted for a transitional National Assembly, the first step toward establishing a permanent government after the U.S.-led invasion that toppled Saddam Hussein in 2003. They defied threats of widespread violence by insurgents who have battled U.S. troops since Saddam's government fell in 2003, April. Bush has called the vote a resounding success. Well, whoever they're voting for is going to be a player for the U.N. system. It doesn't matter who it is. They've been pre-approved by the democracy of the U.N. system and our State Department. More than 1,430 U.S. troops have been killed in Iraq since the invasion, and Sunday's vote has raised questions about whether the troops will be able to leave soon. Laying out a schedule for an American pullout, quote, is exactly the wrong thing to do at this time, end quote, White House Counselor David Bartlett said. Quote, what it says to the enemy is, sit down, wait until they're going to leave, and then strike, end quote. I just don't know what to say about that situation in Iraq, listeners. I just don't know what to say. It would be nice to talk to some Iraqi people that you could trust to see if the situation is any better or not. Communism is being implemented in Iraq, according to certain sources. Communism is being implemented in America. All 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto is in America today. And, listeners, Title 50, Chapter 23, Subchapter 4, Section 841 of the U.S. Code says, under the title Findings and Declarations of Fact, the Congress finds and declares that the Communist Party of the United States, also purportedly a political party, is in fact an instrumentality of a conspiracy to overthrow the government of the United States. It constitutes an authoritarian dictatorship within a republic. It constitutes an authoritarian dictatorship within a republic, demanding for itself the rights and privileges accorded to political parties, but denying to all others the liberties guaranteed by the Constitution. Unlike political parties which evolve their policies and programs through public means, by the reconciliation of a wide variety of individual views, and submit those policies and programs to the electorate at large for approval or disapproval, the policies and programs of the Communist Party are secretly prescribed for by the foreign leaders of the World Communist Movement. Its members have no part in determining its goals and are not permitted to voice dissent to party objectives. Unlike members of political parties, members of the Communist Party are recruited for indoctrination with respect to its objectives and methods, and are organized, instructed, and disciplined to carry into action slavishly the assignments given them by their hierarchical chieftains. Unlike political parties, the Communist Party acknowledges no constitutional or statutory limitations upon its conduct or upon that of its members. The Communist Party is relatively small numerically and gives scant indication of capacity ever to attain its ends by lawful political means. Once again, Title 50, Chapter 23, Subchapter 4, Section 841 of the U.S. Code. Communism is dead. Communitarian network is the reinvented communism. Communitarianism is reinvented communism. Second hour is about to begin.